In many parts of the country, it's been too hot to go anywhere near a tennis court, but the heat wave hovering over a large section of the country raises this question: how much heat can a person stand? Back in 2009, we got an answer from science correspondent Robert Krulwich, one that stands the test of time.
Our subject is when it's even hotter than frying eggs on the sidewalk hot. Bernd, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there, Robert.
Okay, Bernd Heinrich, esteemed biology professor from the University of Vermont. Let's begin with a fact most people know. Water boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit when you're down at sea level.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to wonder, what would happen if you, say, stepped into a room heated to 211 degrees, just a single degree shy of boiling, and then ever so slowly you made that room just a little bit hotter? Would your blood start to boil? In your book, Summer World, you describe how once somebody actually tried this.
Yep.
More than 230 years ago, around 1775, at the Royal Society in London, three very prominent gentlemen, Sir Charles Blagden, doctor and chemist, Sir Joseph Banks, botanist and explorer, and Dr. Daniel Solander, naturalist, also an explorer, they decided to conduct a heat experiment inside a room of their own design.
A small room, 10, 15 feet or something like that square, and they put a metal stove in there, and they got a heating it red hot, and so they conducted experiments and observation in a heated room.
And those experiments, says Professor Heinrich, began with the room at 210 degrees. Then they moved it up to 211, and one by one the gentlemen entered, reported it unpleasantly hot but very bearable. So they made the room hotter to 212, to 220, to 230.
They got it up to 240 or even more.
Oh.
Yeah, 30 or more points above the boiling point of water.
And Sir Charles, was he...
Blogden stayed apparently 8 minutes at 240 degrees, and afterwards he felt he could have actually stayed even longer. So this is an amazing thing. But there are certain conditions involved here.
First of all, the air in that room was dry, not wet heat. It was dry heat. Then the gentleman didn't move around hardly at all. And third, and this is the most important, Sir Charles reported almost immediately he began sweating.
Sweating profusely.
And that, why is that important?
Well, the sweat is removing heat.
Meaning when you sweat and then the sweat evaporates, that act of evaporation pulls heat away from your skin. When water on your skin turns to gas, the heat gets removed. So you sweat some more, then there's more evaporation. And as long as you keep up this sweating, evaporating, the air right around your skin never gets too hot because evaporation protects you.
So that tiny, thin layer of air right next to your skin, maybe it's only millimeters or so, that little space is being cooled.
And that's what keeps you from burning or boiling?
Yeah, by your body temperature, by the evaporating water, we can cool the whole body through the sweating.
But what happens if you can't sweat? Well, to find that out without doing anybody serious harm, Sir Charles brought a chicken egg, chicken eggs, after all, don't sweat, into the room with him. And what happened to the egg?
Well, it was cooked solid because the egg doesn't sweat. Of course, a beefsteak can evaporate water for quite a while.
Oh, I did forget. They also did bring a juicy beefsteak into the room.
But the beefsteak in 33 minutes got dry, and then it got really hot, and then it cooked.
So this is a hooray for sweat story is what this is.
Exactly. It shows the power of sweating, which is an amazing power that humans have.
Well, let's be careful here, because I understand there was a non-human involved.
Well, they said they had a dog.
Okay, so they bring a dog with them.
Yeah, and the dog stays in there at 220 degrees Fahrenheit for half an hour, and actually during that time it's in there, the temperature rises to 236, and the dog comes out, it's panting, but it's perfectly all right.
And 1 month later, says Sir Charles, the dog was still perfectly brisk, showing that if you cool yourself either on the inside through panting or on the outside through sweating, either way, it is apparently possible to survive temperatures at least for a little while that would normally boil water. Robert Krulwich, NPR News.
And that's your health for this Monday morning.
Mm-hmm. Many Americans were maybe wishing for an ice age during last week's heat wave. It was hot. We are talking broiling, baking, frying egg on the sidewalk kind of hot.
You're the one that doesn't like to talk about the heat.
Oh, but Kathleen, we have been talking about the heat the past few days. That's, of course, Kathleen Turner from the 1981 film Body Heat. It's one of many titles posted on our Facebook page after we got to thinking about movies where the heat is turned up. Here's a small assortment of your favorites and ours.
The wind chimes on my porch. They keep ringing, and I go out there expecting a cool breeze. That's what they've always meant. But not this year. This year, it's just hot air.
Do I remind you of hot air?
Maybe if I took the little fan, put it in the icebox, and left the icebox door open, then left the bedroom door open, and soaked the sheets and pillowcase in ice water. No, it's too icky.
Also, today's temperature's gonna rise up over 100 degrees, so that's a Jerry Curl alert. That's right, Jerry Curl alert. If you have a Jerry Curl, stay in the house, or you'll end up with a permanent plastic helmet on your head forever.
It's so damn hot. Milk was a bad choice.
Scenes from Body Heat, followed by Marilyn Monroe in The 7 Year Itch, Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, and Will Ferrell as Ron Burgundy in Anchorman. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
Stay classy, America.
Summer sun, something's begun, but the summer nights.
From NPR News, this is Weekends and All Things Considered. I'm Guy Raz. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill say they've failed to come to an agreement that would raise the debt limit. Now, unless it's resolved soon, the U.S., for the first time in its history, could default on its loans. This morning, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner told ABC News that at this point, there's no margin for error.
This is a critical test for the American political system. It's a critical test for Congress and for the Republican leaders in Congress, because the eyes of the world are on us.
Republicans have said they'll only raise the debt limit if the government promises to slash spending. On Friday, Republican House Speaker John Boehner backed out of deficit reduction talks with President Obama. We'll have updates from our correspondents at the White House and the Capitol. We begin with NPR's Andrea Seabrook on Capitol Hill. Andrea, I understand that there are two congressional plans taking shape at the moment. Let's start with Speaker Boehner's plan. What do you know about it?
Well, I do have some excerpts from a conference call that Speaker Boehner had with his Republican members in the House of Representatives. He talked about a plan that he is trying to bring together that follows the principles of cut, cap, and balance. Now, remember, cut, cap, and balance is what Republicans call their plan that passed week before last. It failed in the Senate last week. It has no chance of coming up in the Senate at this point. So Speaker Boehner actually said that to his own members. He said, you know, that failed in the Senate. You know that. Americans know it. He appeared to be sort of coaxing conservative Republicans, those with a connection to the Tea Party, out of their staunch hard right positions toward a compromise. We don't know exactly what the deal, what the specifics of that plan would be right now. We do know it would be some kind of two-step process with many, many deep trillions of cuts in social programs at this point.
What about the Democrats, Andrea? What do we know about their plans?
We know that the majority leader in the Senate, Harry Reid, is putting together a plan that would cut just as enough, about $2.4 trillion, to be able to raise the debt ceiling. And remember, those two numbers have to be paired to get through the House, to raise the debt ceiling enough to get us through 2012, through the elections at the end of that year. And so what's interesting about this is, remember last week, early in the week, we had this sort of there was the biggest day on Wall Street and for the Dow in a long time, this sort of excitement over the possibility of a grand bargain, a big deal. It fell apart Friday and we seemed to have nothing. After 2 days of whispers and negotiations and burnt up phone lines here in Washington, it appears that we now have two possible plans, one from each party, and each chamber of Congress is trying to pass its own plan and dare the other chamber not to pass it as we come ever closer to this deadline.
That's NPR's Andrea Seabrook on Capitol Hill. Andrea, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
My next guest says he's created something groundbreaking in the world of poetry. Brian McGacken calls it broetry, poetry for bros. Here's how he describes it.
Broetry originated centuries ago, high atop the mountains of feudal Japan, when a small sect of samurai monks decided they were tired of writing poems that were deep and meaningful and opted instead to write something people might actually enjoy. Okay, I made all that up. Broetry is poetry for dudes. It's poetry for people who don't like poetry. Had a rough day? Feel like sitting down and relaxing but only have a few minutes before the girlfriend gets back from Pilates? Broetry. Broetry is poetry for the 21st century. Broetry speaks to every man, woman, and dude child who understands that reading shouldn't have to be a chore. If you think you don't like poetry, you just haven't found a poem that's right for you. Broetry is poetry that's right for you. Broetry is a literary chili cheeseburger.
Brian McGacken calls himself America's Broet Laureate. He's got a master's in poetry from USC, and to everyone's surprise, he's the first in his class to land a book deal. And that book? It's a collection of broems, poems for bros, called Broetry. We asked him to share a few of them, starting with a haiku, "Why Do Buses Smell?"
Why do buses smell? The young girl asks her mother. I listen, because I want to know too. He's in Miami. This is probably the only completely true broem in the book. Every word of this is true. He's in Miami. Just in case the Los Angeles Police Department is looking for information on the whereabouts of a crafty-looking Latino male, age 30, about 5'10", and extremely skinny, who likes to smoke pot a lot and play video games all day, and who enjoys drinking Newcastle, Guinness, and high quantities of vitamin water, in the interest of any ongoing drug-related crimes in the area, for example, illegal possession, illegal sale, or illegal production in his friend's apartment in Los Feliz, he's in Miami. If you manage to track him down, please let me know. He owes me rent, 2 bottles of Arizona green tea, and a frozen pizza. Supreme, please.
Are there any sort of like broetic forebears, you know, in the world of broetry?
Yeah, there are a lot of poets who had broetic qualities. Frost liked baseball. He wrote about sports. His poetry was always very accessible. Even Shakespeare. Shakespeare was just writing about chicks. The cover poem is certainly an homage to William Carlos Williams.
The one on the cover of the book.
Yeah, the cover reads, I have finished the beer that was in the icebox, and which you were probably saving for Friday. Forgive me, this girl came over, so sweet and so hot. Why you should listen to classical music. Two words, John Williams. Jaws, Superman, Indiana Jones. When Darth Maul gets chopped in half, spoiler alert, Obi-Wan is grooving to some classical music. I know what you're thinking, though. That movie came out in 1999. That's not classical music. First, do you know what a leitmotif is? Second, Little Johnny Love is like 80 years old. Classical music. Did you know he composed the music for 4 separate Olympic Games and the theme song to Lost in Space? It's ridiculous. Classical music. It makes you smarter. And admit it, you could be more cultured. You just picked up a book called Broetry.
That's America's Broet Laureate, Brian McGacken. His new book of broems, poems for bros, is called Broetry. Brian, thanks, bro.
Thank you.